I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global independent international investigative news hour. Today is World Radio Day. We celebrate the power of radio as a vital source of news, information, and public discourse on the most pressing issues of our time. The theme this year is radio and climate. 2024 was the warmest year on record. 2025 marks an important turning point as the United States withdraws from the Paris Climate Agreement. Let us raise our radio voices to highlight the urgent climate issues facing our planet. Let us acknowledge radio's role as an enduring and invaluable form of media across the world.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, oh.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Hi. My name is Robert Townsend, and it's hard to make a movie in Hollywood. But I did, with the help of a few friends and a few credit cards.
What's the line?
I ain't be got no weapon.
I ain't be got no weapon.
My film's about making it as an actor in Hollywood.
The only role they gonna let us do is a slave, a butler, or some street hood or something. Don't sell out, brother.
Oh, promised land. Minnesota.
But the real trick is finding a juicy role when the odds are against you.
Good luck, brother.
What we're looking for is an Eddie Murphy type.
What is happening with your cool vines?
Thank you.
You're the worst actor I've ever seen in my life.
Then they said I wasn't black enough for the part.
Ricky, can you tell us what you've been doing since you've graduated?
Well, Robert, I've played 9 crooks, 4 gang leaders, 2 dope dealers. I played a rapist twice.
Whoa.
That was fun.
They'll never play the Rambos until they stop playing the Sambos.
Yeah! I just want to be me. I don't want to be Eddie Murphy.
He's the one we want.
Hollywood Shuffle.
Now that was a good movie.
I love this movie. It was genius.
Hard Knock Radio, Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. Joining us is somebody who is a legendary filmmaker, actor, comedian, writer, and really somebody vying for that Paul Robeson crown of being able to do everything, have a little bit of humanitarian activism in him, transformative and groundbreaking. We're talking about Robert Townsend. And many of us know him best for the movies that he's directed or been in, Hollywood Shuffle, 5 Heartbeats, Meteor Man. I did not realize that you were in Cooley High. And
yes.
I didn't know that you directed Eddie Murphy's Raw, you know? I had no idea until recently. So congratulations on that. But I think the thing that kind of caught many of us, you know, who may not know all the intricacies of what you all do as actors, I didn't know that you, you know, were doing these plays. And so we got a play that you're doing, and it's right here at the Marsh Theater. It is called Robert Townsend's Living the Shuffle. So welcome to the Bay. Glad to have
you
on the show. Let me start off with just a quick thing. It seems like over the past few years, I've seen, or I keep hearing about, more and more actors of your stature who we know because of your film work are really going to the stage. And I guess for somebody like me, it's like, wow, is this the first time? Is this something new? And for others, it's like, no, they came up off the stage. They've been doing this for a while.
Yes.
And they're
yes.
kind of returning. So how's that journey for you? And what's, you know, why do we see this kind of resurgence of going to the stage?
You know, let me say that, well, first, thank you for having me on your show. You know, I really appreciate this time. I'm blessed to wear a lot of hats in show business. You know, I can write a script, I can direct a script, I can produce the script, I can act in the script. What people don't know is that I started out as a stand-up comedian. I started right. out in New York City at the Improvisation Comedy Club. And, you know, I was doing characters and stuff, and I was just a young actor and I could do all this stuff. And then I discovered that Black people were being cast in like really negative roles. And then that's when I became a filmmaker. This one man show that I'm doing right now, it's a one man show about my life called Living the Shuffle, you know, at the Marsh mm-hmm. in Berkeley. And basically it is the journey, the pure journey of an artist. Because sometimes people say, how have you been able to, you know, make it in Hollywood? And, you know, and then I share my story. I come from the west side of Chicago, really rough neighborhood, gangs, drugs, all of that. But in the show, I take you on how I did it. It's kind of like a blueprint. Like, I had this dream and I went from here to there to there to there. And to right. this, you know, I still continue to create now. But, the you know, I miss the stage, because there's some performers, you know, we live on the stage. It's nothing like a live performance to hear the audience laugh, or when I tell a certain story and they go, oh my God, you know. So there's a, you know, and I love my people. I love when the Black people come, because like if I say something really positive, I hear somebody
right. snapping. Snapping, right.
So it is, you know, I think, you know, the artist tribe that I come from, we do it all. And so to be on stage, that's where real actors live and breathe, because it's just you and the audience, and there's no cut. Let's do it again. Right. You got to be in it. So I'm loving it. I'm going to be here for another 5 weeks, and I'm just having fun, you know. And it's stories that I think if you are an artist, if you're not an artist, it'll inspire you, because I've been on quite the journey.
Is there a big difference between doing your stand-up and doing the one-man show in terms of how you kind of approach doing this?
Well, it is. It is, because with stand-up, you know, you're just doing jokes. So I just got to go, hey, and so blah, 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 blah. And then she said, blah, blah, blah. In this show, I call it my low gears. So then I will say, yeah, I was playing basketball, but it was 3 weeks before I was supposed to be murdered.
Hmm.
And then the audience goes, ooh, you know, and it's a true story about the day I was, you know, it's in the story, but I don't talk about this part of it. The next week after I survived, the whole neighborhood smelled like bad bleach. And somebody says, what is that smell? What is that smell? And there were two of us there that night. And I think the other guy, they said, it's a body in the car. And that's where the smell is coming from. And then I couldn't see who it was, but I think it was the other guy. Because
wow.
it would have been me and him in that car if I hadn't done something that saved my life. So the stories, you know, so as a comedian, it's like being able to go, you know, they always say this, it's a fine line between comedy and drama, you know,
right.
It can be really funny or it can make you cry. And, you know, everything that I have created in my body of work, it's funny and it's dramatic. So I know how to walk that line.
I asked the question because it appears as a comedian, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you kind of have a rough outline, I would imagine. You worked out some of your jokes, but you got to be on your toes and you got to improv. You know, if I walk in the building and start heckling you or saying something, or something stands out, you got to be able to shift gears. And I guess, you know, I'm wondering, with you know, a one-man show, do you strictly stick to the script, or do you maybe get in comedian mode and say, you know what, I think I need to switch up and change things on the spot and kind of improv?
No, you know, when it's a one-man show, everything is scripted, because you're really watching it's really, Living the Shuffle is really my life, you know, and so mm-hmm. it's kind of like the career part of my life. I take you through the journey of going through a divorce and like, oh my God, this was blah, blah, blah. I take you through my childhood, like I said, some gangster stuff. I take you through rejection and disappointments. Like, you know, I really want this part, and then they humiliate me. But out of the humiliation, I become a filmmaker. Mm. So you get to see like, oh, dang, they did that to him? Oh, and that was the day, because I talk about this one audition that I had that was really, really bad, and the guy was just, you know, disrespecting me, treating me really bad. And I go to Keenan's house after Keenan Ivory Wayans. I go to his house right. The audition, and Keenan had the same audition, and he saw the look on my face, and I was so mad this one day. And that's when, you know, like when you get mad, you go like, "What are we gonna do? What are we gonna do? They can't talk to me like that. They can't treat me like that." And then it came out of my voice, and I said, "We got to make our own movies." And Keenan was like, "Rob, make our own movies? You didn't go to film school. You never directed a short." And I was like, "But we could do it. And what you don't know is what you don't know." And we started to make the first film, Hollywood Shuffle. So the wow. one man show is just kind of like a blueprint for artists. If you say, well, you know, I love Robert Townsend's work. Robert Townsend is always doing quality work. Five Right. Heartbeats is my movie, Meteor Man, BAPS with Halle Berry. People don't know.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and so Holiday Heart with Ving Rhames and Alfred Woodard. So I've done all kinds of things. And I think sometimes when you're the director, people don't watch the credits to go, who directed this? They just start enjoying the movie, and they don't go like, oh, that's a Robert Townsend project. So for me, it's kind of like a blueprint. I take you behind the scenes of my creative process and how I think. And you know, and people, I was having a conversation with my assistant, my right hand, and we were talking about failure. And people go like, yeah, I failed. And you know, you're gonna fail a lot. And I was like, I don't believe in failure. I think that, you know, whatever happens, whatever experience you happen, it's a learning lesson. It's never
opportunity to learn.
It's an opportunity. I never look at, you know, anything that I've worked on and say, I failed. That's not even my vocabulary. I learn. Right. Okay, next time I'm not going to do that. Next time I'm going to do this. So the show has a lot of those components. You're going to laugh a lot, and then you're going to go, oh, shoot. You know what I mean? Right. There's going to be moments that will energize your heart.
Do you do a lot of costume changes?
No. It's just me. It's just
you.
It's a 90-minute show, but I'm doing. I do a lot of characters. So
well, that's why I asked, because I know you break into characters as a comedian.
Yes. So I mean, but you know, part of it is that it's getting the physicalities, you know, because part of the magic of doing a one-man show is that you're watching it happen right before your eyes.
Okay.
So I never, you know, like
when never leave the stage.
I never leave the stage. So when I say, you know, the old man came up to me, all of a sudden I become an old man and I start, you know, I'll just talk to you a second about my life. So I will just transform. So if I go, you know, so you'll watch me and then you'll go like, whoa, he went to another place.
And just now you seem like an old man. You know, maybe because your voice had such presence.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, not even looking at you that way. I'm seeing old man. And then I'm going, oh, it's Robert Townsend.
Yeah. So in the show, I'm doing so many different characters. You know, like, so for, you know, like I do a whole chunk like about Julius Caesar. And all of a sudden, you're in Roman times. And it is, you know, my lord, I pray not the king. He lives here. What? Who goes there? Hawkeye, say, who goes there, my lord? Here. You know, so I will transform. And then it's all in my body and everything. So I'm just having fun.
We're talking with actor, filmmaker, actor. When we put the tour, that means something. He just ain't messing around. Is it actor? You know, as you were talking, and just I'm thinking like, hey, you're coming out at a time where there seems to be some transformation and some movement in Hollywood. You know, you, Spike Lee, John Singleton, it seems to be a lot of movement. And from my perception, it seems to be coming from a place of like, I don't like what's going on. I want to make some changes, and people figured out ways to make some changes. And all these projects are celebrated. You know, there seems to be like a lot of movement. And then for some reason, I don't know if there was a lull or things disappeared, but I'm just wondering, you know, from your standpoint, do you think it elevated to the heights that you ideally would like to see? Or was there some sort of stallment, or maybe people went into different directions? Because it seems to me we're back in the same place in terms of people looking and saying, I wish we had more projects that represented us, you know? And then people will go, we need more Spike and more Robert Townsends. And, you know, and I still show Hollywood Shuffle and Bamboozle to my classes, you know, when we're talking about images. And so how did you see the trajectory? Because that was 30 years ago.
Well, I think in Hollywood, there's an ebb and flow. You know, okay. There are times like in 1991, that was the most movies released with filmmakers of color. So that was
really?
Me,
wow.
Spike, Singleton, you know, Matty Rich. There were all these, Reggie Hudlin, Warrington Hudlin. There were all these filmmakers, Mario Van Peebles. So, you know, I think sometimes Hollywood, you know, with economics, they pull back on how many films of color they make. And then it becomes, you know, sometimes a little bit difficult to get the next movie out there because Hollywood makes you jump through hoops. So I think,
but you know, folks like yourselves made your own films. So
yeah,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, see, what happens is you make your own film and then someone buys it and then they plug you into the system. And then once you get plugged into the system, then you go like, okay, we're going to make a lot of movies. And then the system goes, yeah, we are. We like that. And then that becomes part of the trick because once, you know, because then all of a sudden you are a part of the studio system. And all of us started out as renegades. And so part of it is returning to the renegade spirit. That's really what it is. Because as much as you go like, yeah, the studios are going to make all the black movies. No, they're going to do 1, 2, 3, 4.
Wow.
You know, and so, you know, I think I'm still part renegade. I know Spike is still part renegade, you know, Mario, you know, it's
what. I just interviewed Mario a couple of months ago. And what you just described, that was like, am I talking to Mario or I'm talking to Robert Townsend? Because he talked about being plugged into that system.
So because you know, it's kind of like you think, hey, I'm part of the studio system. Hey, this is my next movie. I want to do this, and they go like, we got to read it. Let's read it. I don't understand it. What do you think? You know, and they dissect it, and then those that are truly independent, they continue. You know, it's just getting back to the renegade spirit. You know, I did a documentary about the five heartbeats called Making the Five Heartbeats. And
okay.
The documentary, you know, some people describe as a masterclass with Robert Townsend. I take you through my process, you know, Keenan and I writing the script, casting the movie. But what you also see in the film is no one wanted it. It took 3 years to get that film green lit because nobody wanted it. So, you know, the journey in Hollywood is a journey and you've got to be up for the task.
Have doors opened and maybe you have a little bit more mobility because you have your Oprahs and Tyler Perry's, you know, who seem to be able to green lit on their own terms.
Right.
you know, from the outside looking in again, you go, well, damn, you know, we got that there. So maybe the Robert Townsends of the world can just go and run there. Or are there other layers and levels that even when you are independent, you still have to move and shake? And I'll just give one example. I remember we did this documentary with QD3 that was called Letter to the President. And I remember we took them around and introduced them to Jim Brown and Angela Davis and had all these interviews. But then when he went to go distribute it, you know, there was like, yeah, you know, nobody knows who these folks are. Next thing I know, they had to do all these, you know, inserts with artists, you know, like get Snoop Dogg and get 50 Cent and put them in there. And it was good. But for me, it was like, I think it was better just to hear all of Jim Brown, you know, talk about what he was talking about versus being interspersed with 50, who was just there to, you know, attract folks. So that was the extra layer. I don't know if that exists for somebody in your position, or does it exist when you're working with a Tyler or Oprah or some of these other folks that we hear are big wigs?
Well, you know, I mean, the thing is that it all gets down to the material. And, you know, is that a movie millions of people want to watch? Is that a documentary that millions of people, at the end of the day, you know, it is a business. So if somebody says, oh, I'm going to spend $800,000 on a documentary, I want to make my 800 back. It's not charity. So, you know, I used to go, you know, why would they bring in these rappers or so-and-so and so-and-so singers to be, but part of it is they all have a fan base. And so if everybody's a little piece of their fan base joins and says, you know, like there's people that go, I'm a Robert Townsend fan, boom. I'm a Snoop Dogg fan, boom. I'm a Nas fan, boom. Mm-hmm. If all those fan bases come together, then you make your money back. But if you only have one little slither, you know, that's where there's a problem. And so now we get into the business of Hollywood, because at the end of the day, is the project commercial? Will people go see the project? You know, actor friends of mine used to complain a lot, and they used to say, why do they have all these rappers in these movies? Why don't they get real actors? Because you can have the best actors in the world, but if nobody knows them, nobody's going to come.
And but does that apply even when you're doing it independently? And what about somebody like you? Didn't you make your movie with credit cards and
all that sort of stuff? What we're talking about is once you get into the system, you know, like as an independent, yeah, you can do a film. Like my first film was done with a credit card. It was done for $100,000, and eventually we made close to $5-6 million on it. So
why not say that route? Are you kind of forced to go into the system?
The thing that I would say is that the system reaches out to you and plugs you in. And then once you get plugged in, you know, there's a part that is very sexy to have, hey, you have money to do your film. But what comes with it is a lot of notes. And so it's not as pure. And the other thing is that you can only ask for favors, but for so much, you know, then people go like, you know, Rob, I'm gonna get paid like you getting paid.
Okay. And,
you know, so you can't just go like, hey man, do me a solid. You know,
right.
there is a part, you can do that one time, two times, maybe three. Uh-uh. And if the studio is not willing to pay and they go, we'll give you this much and go make your movie. Now it's on you to make the deals with all the people, and you don't want to insult, you know, I don't want to reach out to somebody that I really respect and go, hey, I got this. So it's just a matter of navigating those waters.
Right. And does the same apply when you have your Tyler Perry's and Oprah's and others?
You know, I don't know how those budgets work in that universe. You know, when you have that many people or brand, you know, like The Color Purple, they're going to get the top dollar. But you got Oprah, Quincy, you know, Whoopi, you got everybody on there. And then Tyler is like a force of nature. I mean, he's been able to figure it out on a whole nother, I mean, he lives in a whole nother universe because he is just, you know, a machine. He's a right. machine.
What, you know, was there ever a desire for you to kind of move into that sort of shot calling position to be that machine, you know, the Robert Townsend Studios, you know?
Well, you know,
that...
I did have a studio in 90. Well, I've always been an entrepreneur. What people don't know about me is that I've always been an entrepreneur. I had my own studio in Hollywood. I took over the Hollywood Professional School where all these movie stars went to school in the 50s, Debbie Reynolds and all these different, Shirley Temple, all of that. And then wow. the earthquake hit in 1994 and I lost my building.
Was that the Northridge earthquake?
I think it was Northridge, but it affected yeah. Hollywood. And right. I had shot Meteor Man in there, Five Heartbeats in there, and I was going to do The Parenthood, my sitcom, in there, and then we got hit by the earthquake. But I think like an entrepreneur, you know, like in 2001, I went to Atlanta and I was running a television network called the Black Family Channel. And I ran that for 4 years. And that was me exercising my executive brain. And okay. the network did really well, but the partners, it was attorney Willie Gary. It was-
Okay. Yeah,
a baseball player, Cecil Fielder, Evander Holyfield, they had put a ton of money into the network. And so once I got the network strong, you know, they said, hey, man, people are, you know, looking to buy it. And so then we sold. But I had 4 years of running the television network. So I always think like an entrepreneur. I think different. My brain thinks different.
So what's the next level? At this point, and in a world where they're saying no more DEI, and as somebody told me, they want more Yellowstone than they want. What's the word they said? We're in the post George Floyd moment, so all those black days is over as far as we're concerned. Where do you see things going? And you know, and with your entrepreneurial brain and experience, are you able to, you know, do you see a way which we can navigate on up, level up, as they say?
Well, here's the thing. There is always opportunity. So I never look at it from the point of view, you know, like, because that's a soundbite, you know, like, and there's not going to be any more. As long as people of color want to be entertained, there's going to be some platform. So sometimes I think it is about regrouping. You know, like right now, it's just kind of like, okay, I have all this new information. Okay. Right. So, all right, so DEI is under attack. Okay, got it. Okay, that door closed. What's that door over there? That door closed. What's that door over there? Hey, what's this little door right here? So
right.
real artists, real entrepreneurs, you just start looking for other opportunities. There are other opportunities. It's instead of like going, I saw on the news that all the doors are closed. Nah, no. It's
right.
like there's certain doors that are closed, and there's other. It's like if all these big, you know, supermarkets and, you know, department stores are, you know, closing shop to a DEI, where's the opportunity? There's always an right. opportunity. It's just kind of being still and quiet. Right. And saying, oh, it's over there, rather than like, oh, the world's on fire. It's like, okay.
So we got to create our own.
So for me, yeah. as an artist, I'm always looking at other opportunities. None of this affects me. It really doesn't, because it's kind of like, okay, I wasn't in that door anyway. Or,
right.
oh, that door over there. But, oh, wait a minute, there's a crack. I can see something. So that's how I, you know. My mantra in life is there's always another way. That's my mantra. There's always another
okay.
way.
And it's a good one to have. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with actor, filmmaker, entrepreneur Robert Townsend. He is in town for the next 5 weeks at the Marsh Theater, Friday and Saturday and Sunday shows for his one-man play, Living the Shuffle. I want to go back a little, you know, and I say this humorously, but I'm also kind of serious. You said, you know, from Chicago. So everybody I know from Chicago is from the South Side. And I remember, you know, somebody took me around all over the place. I was like, man, This is a big city. This is great. And it's like, yeah, you know, one day you'll have to go to the West Side. And I was like, well, can you take me? It's like, I don't go to the West Side. So I have all these friends from Chicago, and I always joke with them, and I'll be like, oh, you're West Side Torrance and you're West Side Debbie. And they'd be like, no, we're not from the West Side, you know. And so now I'm talking to somebody from the West Side. So I guess humorously, you're like, what's it like over there? Because I've never been. And two, being just from Chicago, you know, which in many ways is a black mecca and has, you know, this whole universe onto itself, how much of that was really, you know, grounding for you, that we see that reflective in the way that you move and shake and approach your craft?
You know, let me say this. The West Side of Chicago, when I was coming up, was really rough. And it's even rougher now. You know, okay. I mean, I think one of my best friends is the president of the West Side branch of the NAACP. And I work with him all the time, you know, trying to help, you know, like we go to Cook County Jail and talk to the inmates. We go to the juvenile and just, you know, the West Side shaped me. It really did, because I had to learn to survive. I had to learn to hustle. And right. When you're in a rough neighborhood, you learn the streets, you learn how to navigate the streets, not go to that corner, go over there, move around here, you know, watch your back. And so I think it developed my spider senses. So when I got right. to Hollywood, I know how to move. And, you know, you learn to read people better, you know, so I the West Side, yeah, because there's a big thing about South Side versus West Side, and the West Side is rough. It is, you know, but I wouldn't change anything about my child. Like in the show, I talk about growing up on the West Side and all. Yeah. Like when I was a kid, man, it was so bad. You know, like I remember, this is not in the show, but when I was a kid, my grandmother had taken me downtown and bought this jacket, and it was like this a thermo silver kind of jacket. And, you know, I was like, oh my God, I love this jacket. My mother said, go to the store and get some eggs. And I said, yes, ma'am. And I had my jacket on, I'm styling my jacket. And the guy walks by me with a German Shepherd. And he goes, nice jacket. And I said, thank you. You know, and he goes, give it to me. And I was like, no, it's my jacket. And it was the freezing winter. And he looks at the German Shepherd and he goes, and the German Shepherd starts to maul my arm, and he's just mauling my arm. And then I give it to you. I take it off and I give him my jacket, and I just walk home with the eggs freezing. So there were so many things that I was like, oh, wow. Oh, man, my God. You know, so my childhood, you know, but like I said, when I think about the movie Claudine, mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen the film Claudine.
I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, with James Earl Jones and Diane Carroll. Yeah. That was my childhood. You know, my mother raised four kids on her own. And,
you had to hide the ironing board and everything?
We didn't have to do that, but it was pretty close. It was that welfare stuff. Yeah. We were on welfare. That welfare.
But, you know, but it's crazy, you know, not to sidetrack, you know, growing up in New York in the Bronx was like that. And I recall, you know, getting that assistance, and I always tell people, like, my stepfather, you know, my father, we had to be like, you know, that's our uncle. We couldn't be like, couldn't say, oh, this is Pops. You know, you had to be like, yeah.
Right,
and
right.
I remember being on the elevator, you know, and, you know, in public, we referred to him as uncle, you know. Mm. And somebody's like, ain't that your dad? You know, and it's like, shh. His uncle, because, you know, yeah, the minute it got out, you know, things were going to change. You weren't going to get the benefits. So that's what I remember about Claudine. That's what I can relate to.
I mean, that the whole thing of trying to, you know, raise children, have a relationship in the hood, concerned about your kids, you know, all I identify once I saw that movie. That's why I cast Diane Carroll in The Five Heartbeats. I loved her so much in Claudine. I was like, I want her in, you know, my film. So, yeah.
Yeah, she was an actor, too.
Oh, my God.
And a groundbreaking one at that, you know?
Yeah. No, she had the first she had the first sitcom starring a woman of color on television. Well,
that was Julia. Yeah. Cooley High. So I didn't know you was in it, you know, but it's based on Chicago. What was that experience like?
Cooley High was, so you talk about an experience. I was doing theater at the time at XBAG, Experimental Black Actors Guild, and the director there, Mr. Paymoon Rami, he invited Michael Schultz, who was directing Cooley High, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, and Glenn Turman to come and see the show. So they came and saw the show. I was in the show, and then I auditioned, and you know, Michael Schultz, you know, loved my audition and gave me, you know, a few lines to say in the movie. And it it changed my life. It changed my life because when they had the premiere, there were a lot of black movies coming out then, but they didn't ring true and they weren't authentic. Right. And when I saw Cooley High, I really saw myself and my friends. And
I was going to ask you,
Yeah, so it rang true. And I know it planted seeds in me. I didn't know I was going to be a filmmaker back then, but I just knew, like, there's a certain touch in that movie that I love, that I want to watch. And that's why the film became a classic. How Michael Schultz used the Motown music, how he cast it, how he added in layers like Preach, the Glenn Turman character, loved poetry, and he was reading this wonderful, beautiful poetry, and he wanted to be a writer in Hollywood. And this is back in the 70s, the idea of, I'm gonna go to Hollywood, you know? And I used to do that whole, you know, like, man, put up, we got high, you know? And he would do the thing, you know, I know you don't like poetry, man, but I wrote it for you anyway, Chief. You could have been the greatest. You know what I mean? I used to do that, you know, in my act, you know, because Glenn Turman, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, finest actors ever.
Yeah. You know, Sam Greenlee was from Chicago, right? Or at least.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Did he have an impact? Because he did the independent thing and, you know, for a while, and then the Spook Who Sat by the Door got banned and the whole nine.
Well, the thing is that the Spook Who Sat by the Door changed me in so many levels, because I would go to the movies and see all the, what they call the exploitation movies, but they were really my heroes. So I don't think they were exploitation, just black people in lead roles kicking butt. But when I saw Spook Who Sat by the Door, I was like, oh, this is about revolution. This is not just a jive movie. This is really good. And then I told everybody at school about it the next day, and then they yanked it out of the theaters. And I was like, oh, wow, this is deep. It was there one day, and then it was gone.
It was only one day? Wow.
One day, because they were like, wait a minute, this is about revolution, and this is about black people getting together and working together. And so the movie disappeared. And then it wasn't until like maybe years later, somebody got one print out of Gary, Indiana, and made copies of it. And then Tim Reed, filmmaker, actor Tim Reed, he released the DVD, and then he called me and asked me, would I be a part of the commentary? So on the first DVD for Spook Who Sat by the Door, I'm on the commentary. Okay. Also, when I would come to Chicago, I hosted a few screenings, and I was on, you know, several panels with Sam Greenlee, and he was a force of nature. That brother was outspoken, revolutionary.
Yep.
He would, you know, and he didn't bite his tongue. He spoke his truth. But that movie, in terms of the power of, if we came together as a people to do anything, clean up the community, help the children, education.
Well, the fact that they banned it just showed me how powerful films were. You know, I saw it in a theater. I didn't know it had been out for that long. You know, it had been out in banned, but I saw it in the 80s in El Cerrito. Wasn't in Oakland, but it was up here in El Cerrito somewhere.
Wow.
You know, and it was like, Spook Who Sat by the Door, what's this? And then, you know, I went and saw it. And, you know, then I realized the gravity, like, yeah, this movie just, they re-released it, or they showed it, you know, for that time. But did Sam give you any advice? Was he critical of the work that you and others were doing? Because he didn't bite his tongue. Did he push the envelope, so to speak? You know,
with No. He and I got along really well because I was like one of his cinematic sons, basically. Mm. You know, like with Hollywood Shuffle, I'm talking about Revolution 2, you know,
right.
In a comical way, like, hey, we got to stop playing these parts. And if we don't do it, you know, we're part of the problem. And so, no, he embraced, you know, because, you know, everything that I've, you know, created, you know, knock on wood, I have tried to portray Black people in a positive light.
Right.
You know? I mean, that's kind of, I talk about it in the show. I have an experience in France when I'm showing Hollywood Shuffle. And I have an experience in France that really shapes my point of view on images and where we are and who we are as people of color. So with right. Sam Greenlee, he was just like, oh, okay, this Robert Townsend is the real deal. Because when they did Spook, you had Ivan Dixon directing, you had Lawrence Cook as the Spook, you had right. all these wonderful actors, but after that film, a lot of them got blacklisted.
That's what I heard. And then you had, who did the sound? Herbie? Was it Herbie or Earth, Wind & Fire that was for the soundtrack? I think it was Herbie Hancock was the soundtrack for it.
Yeah, Herbie Hancock.
That was a powerful, powerful movie. Let me ask you this, Meteor Man.
Yes, sir.
So that's groundbreaking in itself. Black superhero before Panther, right? How do you like the trajectory of that? Especially, you know, where we're going to be seeing somebody who's catching a lot of heat in terms of Anthony Mackie as he's playing Captain America, right? But we're in these times where anything you do, I think these are well-funded campaigns to, you know, to hate on anything that has us or people of color and make it seem like it's not going to be successful or to toss it into controversy. That's just me. But, you know, Meteor Man to Panther to seeing Anthony Mackie, you know, take over Captain America, you were groundbreaking in that too. And do you like the direction the superheroes have gone?
Well, you know, it gives me hope. You know, I mean, here's the thing. I, you know, for me, I'm always looking at new territory. So when I mm-hmm. created Meteor Man, it, you know, was the first, you know, African-American superhero. And I put together an all-star cast with a who's mm-hmm. who. So, but everything is about timing. You know, some people, right. say, you know, Robert Townsend is always, you know, ahead of his time. He's thinking about superheroes back then and people like superheroes.
Right. You mean, when did that drop? Did that drop in, what, 93, 94?
93. It was 93.
So yeah, you're right in the middle of the crack era. You're right in the middle of the New Jack City. So it was very interesting at that time.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. So people that, you know, it was interesting because there were certain people go, why is Robert doing a movie for kids? And because I just come off the Five Heartbeats, and so that's, you know, like people are like, we love the Heartbeats, the soul right. and the comedy and the music. And then I was like, well, we don't have any movies for children, and, right. and we need to plant seeds in our kids about, you know, being a hero, being, you know, so that's how it started.
And do you like where it's at now in terms of the superherodom?
Well, I mean, I don't really watch a lot of the Marvel, you know, once I've created my superhero, I'm not like, you know, like watching all the shows. So I can't right. really comment on where it is. I know mm-hmm. we have more like Anthony Mackie, and he talks in his interview. He did an interview and he talked about, you know, he says, yeah, man, I saw Meteor Man when I was a kid and I was dressing up like Meteor Man. And I was like, oh, right. you know, you never know who's being affected, but it just gives me hope, you know, that there's, you know, that he does exist, and I wish him the best, and I want him to win.
Real talk. We've been talking with Robert Townsend. Brother, I have a million more questions, but we don't have a million minutes worth of time. Couple of things as we close out. One, any other projects outside of this play on the horizon for you that we should be looking out for? And for anybody who's up and coming in this industry, especially at this time when you can really do for self with videos that you can have on your iPhone and the whole nine, what would you suggest to folks so that they kind of continue the spirit and really build on the seeds that you and others have planted?
Well, let me say this first off. I stay busy, so right now I'm reoccurring on a show called The Bear, and we're about to go into our fourth season. So I
What's that about?
The Bear is The Bear is one of the most popular shows right now on television. It's won SAG Awards, the Golden Globes, Emmys. My daughter on the show won the Emmy a year ago, Golden Globe.
Okay.
Just won the AFI. So it's called The Bear. It's a show about this chef that comes back to take over his brother's business under mysterious circumstances. And it's so well written, and I'm honored to be part of the show. So I'm doing that. I just finished a limited series for Apple with Billy Crystal called Before, and I play his best friend. Directing in the 50 Cent's Power Universe, there's a series called Force, and I directed the final season finale for season 3, and that'll come out this fall. Currently,
right. What's the Force focus around? Tommy?
Tommy Egan.
Tommy Egan.
Yes.
Is he the real deal?
I love Joseph. He is such an amazing actor, wonderful being, lovely spirit. So we get along well. So I did the episode 3 and the season finale for season 3, which is the final season. And so I think that'll come out in the fall. They haven't given us a date yet. And then recently I've been directing Papa's House with my good friend Damon Wayans and his son, you know, Damon Jr. And that's on CBS on Mondays at 8:30. But I also got to say The Neighborhood is on at 8 o'clock with Cedric. And my daughter, Sky Townsend, has joined the cast of The Neighborhood. So I'm also proud papa in this moment. Proud, proud, proud papa.
Man, so you're one of those dynastic families, the Townsends. The Townsends and the Wayans.
Yes. Well, you know, Keenan and them, there's 10 brothers and sisters, you know. There's only a handful of us, but my daughter's holding it down. Sky's holding it down.
Do you see yourself as a Wayne? Because I just associate all y'all. You know, maybe it's because of living color, but I put you all as one big tribe. Maybe you all are cousins or what have you, but it's hard for me to separate you all from the Wayans, even though there's, you know, a bunch of different people in there.
You know what? Keenan and I were talking the other day, and it's kind of like we started a revolution, and now, you know, like with Hollywood Shuffle, because back in 1984, the idea of writing, directing, producing, creating your own movie was going against a billion voices that said it couldn't be done. So we are forever connected, you know, because we created a lot of great stuff. And I think it does spill over to family, because you go like, you mean you and Keenan started this, and now there's Sean and Marlon and Damon and da-da-da-da and... So we are connected. We are family forever.
Well, congratulations on the success. And thank you for the seeds you planted in the path that you and others have blazed. Much appreciated. I'm definitely going to come see you all, you know, in Living the Shuffle. That's going to be date night.
You're going to have a wonderful time.
But you're also going to be like smack dab in the middle of All-Star Weekend too, you know, next week.
So
is Robert Townsend going to go out there and let everybody know, you know, I know you got connections with a lot of the players and people that's coming into town. It's got to be a stop for them.
Well,
it's
got to be
a stop.
Well, here's the thing. I know it's going to be a lot going on. And, you know, the thing is that when I am, you know, performing, I don't go out because I got to save my energy. So as much as I would want to go out, you know, I got three shows to do that weekend. And so I'm just going to stay in and focus, you know, because it's a lot of people. So,
so
you
no,
know,
so no dunking contest for Robert Town.
Not this time. Not this time. But I'm looking forward to it. But thank you for taking all this time to talk with me. I appreciate you, my brother.
We appreciate you. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program. Turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Cam. Innovation. Stimulating ill conversation. Anything else you just imitate. Simulation. Step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio. Let's go. Big shout out to Davey D. Yeah, right. Feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy though. Oakland stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bellevue. Yeah. Come on. Check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat to the belly from the steel gray beats. They bleed. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say some peace to their lovers, I name with a please. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. You go.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast. Dance out.
If this world were mine.
Hey, Roman numeral 7, babe, drop it like it's hot. If this world was mine, I'd take your dreams and make them multiply. If this world was mine, I'd take your enemies in front of God. Introduce them to that light, hit them strictly with that fire. Fire, 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 fire. Hey, Roman numeral 7, babe, drop it like it's hot. If this world was mine, I'd take your dreams and make them multiply. If this world was mine, I'd take your enemies in front of God. Introduce them to that light, hit them strictly with that fire. It's a vibe, do your dance, let them watch. She a fan, he a flop, they just wanna kumbaya, nah.
This world, concrete, flowers grow. Heartache, she only do what she know. Weekends, get it popping on the low. Better days coming for sure.
This world,
if it was up to me, I wouldn't give it nobody's no sympathy. I'll take away the pain, I'll give you everything. I just wanna see when you wanna see.
If this world were mad,
she know. Weekends get it popping on the low. Better days coming for sure. If it was up to me, I wouldn't give it nobody no sympathy. I'll take away the pain, I'll give you everything. I just wanna see when you wanna see.
If this world
I can't lie, I trust you, I love you. I won't waste your time, I turn it off just so I can turn you on. I'ma make you say it loud. I'm not even tripping, I won't stress you out. I might even settle down for you. I'ma show you I'm a pro. I'ma take my time and turn it off just so I can turn you on, baby. Weekends get popping on the low. Better days coming for sure.
This world,
I can't lie, I trust you, I love you. I won't waste your time, I turn it off just so I can turn you on. I'ma make you say it loud. I'm not even tripping, I won't stress you out. I might even settle down for you. I'ma show you I'm a pro. I'ma take my time and turn it off just so I can turn you on, baby. Weekends get it poppin' on the low. Better days coming for sure.
Why are you coming for?
Hard Knock Rockin'.
This is Bird Note. European starlings, first introduced in New York City, have become invasive and compete with native species for nesting sites. They're now one of the most common birds in many cities across North America. But as they've entered new habitats, they've begun to change. The starling's ancestors lived in mild and temperate climates in Europe. In the U.S., they've encountered environments quite unlike where they came from. Long, frigid winters, as well as dry deserts and plains. Recent genetic research into European starlings shows that their DNA is changing, possibly because starlings in North America have more genetic adaptation to thrive in arid environments and colder temperatures compared to those still in Europe. European starlings have also been introduced in Australia. There, the starling's invasion is more limited in scope, but they also show a pattern of genetic change. Genes that help the starlings regulate their cells under more extreme conditions may be favored for birds spreading out further from where they were introduced. Evolution is an ongoing process, and sometimes the best examples can be found in birds that live right alongside us in cities. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
This is Bird Note. That's not a distant dog barking. It's a black skimmer in flight at the Chincoteague National Wildlife Refuge in Virginia. This striking black and white bird with a red bill and red feet has a most unusual way of feeding. It flies low along the surface of the water with its beak open. The bird's long and narrow lower mandible angles down into the water. When it strikes a small fish, the shorter, curved upper bill snaps shut. The skimmer rises into the air and swallows its prey or takes it back to its young. As skimmers feed by touch, they continue foraging at night when they are less visible to their prey. Closely related to terns, skimmers nest on sand islands in closely packed colonies. They depend on undisturbed islands and abundant small fish, both characteristic of the coastal lagoons of the Atlantic Flyway. Forage at our website anytime, day or night. You're always welcome. Today you'll find more about black skimmers and the Chincoteague National Wildlife Refuge. That's birdnote.org. Bird Note's newsletter delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox. Sign up at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
You are tuned to KBOO Portland.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on